Hey everyone, this is Harmon. Today we have a very special episode of Comedy History 101. We dive into the history of the man who in 1919 was considered the godfather or pioneer of modern day stand-up comedy. He kind of bridged the gap between vaudeville comedians and modern day stand-up comedy as we see it today, but there is a reason why you have never heard of him. I'm just teasing that out right now. His name is Frankie Faye, and you will learn a hell of a lot about him in this episode. It doesn't turn out pretty. Before we dive into the episode, a few plugs. I have a new book out called Tribe Spotting, Undercover Culture Stories. You can check that out on Amazon. It's all about my true life exploits undercover, exploring the concept of tribalism in America. Also, August 17th through 25th, I'll be appearing at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland doing my brand new solo show, Harmon Leon's American Horror Story. It's at 8:35 at the Banshee Lambeth. And without further ado...
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid.
Comedy History 101.
I was supposed to sing a sort of a sad doughboy song. And there were several people applied for the position, and I won it. I mean, they wanted a sad singer, and after the Warners heard me, they said, well, he's about as sad as you can get him. So, ladies and gentlemen, I was picked. Now, I was to sing this sad number, and I probably could sing it for you now, but I've forgotten the lyrics. I have a very nice moon song, though, that I could sing for you. You know, they write those moon songs every 20 minutes. I'd like to sneak this one in before they write another.
Ah, okay.
All righty. There we go.
What you just heard there was a clip from a man named Frankie Faye, who is noted as being the first stand-up comedian. And, of course, you've tuned into another episode of Comedy History 101, where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon. With me, as always, Scott Kalanico. Scott, how are you? You're either going to say top of the morning or something in a robot voice or what?
Hello, Harmon.
Yeah, okay. Nice. So, Scott...
I was going to say top of the morning, but... So, is that my thing now? Do I say top of the morning?
Well, it's like you're get her done in a way.
All right.
Though.
Okay.
It's, well, I don't know.
Top of the morning.
Can someone top else's catchphrase become your catchphrase? Is that...
Get her done, Harmon. Get her done.
What you talking about?
How about if I start doing a different... That'll be my thing. I'll do a different comedian catchphrase every episode. Okay, I got it.
Sure. Send me an email and tell me how that works for you.
you'll notice when our subscriptions go up. That's how you'll be able to tell.
Yeah, exactly. So, Scott, I'm going to start this episode with a little joke. Do you like the jokes, Scott?
I do like the jokes. I like the comedy and the jokes.
All right, ready for the joke to kick off the episode on Frankie Faye?
Yes.
Okay, which Hollywood actor has the biggest prick?
I don't know, Harmon, tell me.
Ready for the punchline?
Yes.
Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, man, that's like 1938.
Stanwyck. All right, Scott, do you want to maybe deconstruct that joke a little bit?
Yeah, well, okay, here's the thing, Harmon. So the deal is that Frankie Faye, the subject of our racist comedy special today, was
1891 to 1961.
Right, was married. He was the first husband of Barbara Stanwyck.
And born to vaudevillian parents.
Yes, and so he was, he's also helped her kind of get her start into the movies. So that was the running joke in Hollywood, because he was kind of a racist, kind of an anti-Semite, and also a wife beater. So.
Yeah, and just and in those statements, just take out the phrase kind of.
And supplement
it with the word was.
Mm-hmm.
there's an interesting tidbit about Barbara Stanwyck. Again, Frankie Faye was her first husband. Frankie Faye is noted as being the first modern stand-up comedian back in the vaudeville days. He was the one who first came out and just started talking to the audience. Before then, in vaudeville, you would either have like your Charlie Chaplin types doing kind of physical comedy, you know, seltzer bottles and pies in the face. Also, slipping on a banana peel, which was invented in vaudeville. And if you want to hear more of that, you can check out our past episode on the history of slipping on a banana peel. Subscribe today on iTunes. So you would either have that in vaudeville, or you would have your like Abbott and Costello double act, you know, straight man, funny guy. And Scott, if you want to hear more about that sort of dynamic, where would people go?
I guess they could go. No, not that I guess. I'll take out the I guess, and I will tell people to go to our website, comedyhistory101.com, where you can read more about the history of the straight man, as well as finding this on iTunes, Google Play, Last.fm, or anywhere you find your favorite podcast.
Yes, but to go back from our digression, Frankie Faye was the first comedian on the vaudeville circuit, and this was like considered doing the edgy comedy of the day. He was the first edgy comedian who would actually come out as himself and just kind of talk directly to the audience and tell stories.
Yeah, I think one of the other one of the reasons I think earlier when he was doing it with a double act, like I think he was the straight man to a guy who would skate around him on roller skates. And so he would do the straight lines, and then the roller skating guy would get all the punchlines. The wacky roller skating guy.
Yeah, so again, there's a few reasons why, you know, we haven't heard of Frankie Faye up until recently. And spoiler alert, Scott, we kind of do a podcast on the history of comedy.
Right.
There's a few reasons why Frankie Faye kind of went off to exist in obscurity. You know, he is the pioneer of stand-up comedy. People like Jack Benny, Bob Hope, Milton Berle, they all say they were heavily influenced by Frankie Faye. And, you know, again, at his height in vaudeville, he was a headliner, and he was earning, you know, around $18,000 in, you know, 1920 money, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So, Scott, the reason why he kind of has existed in obscurity in 2019, do you want to say it together on three?
One, two, three.
He was
racist.
Yay.
All right.
Yay. Yeah. So not only was he the pioneer, you know, and I guess they would say the grandfather of modern day stand up comedy, but he was also just a very horrible human being. And we will get later on in this episode to where that kind of led him to.
But I think the thing is, from what the stuff that I read and stuff, that he wasn't like, I mean, we're not talking like Andrew Dice Clay levels of like, you know, things, you know, I won't say the word, hanging from a flagpole outside Brooklyn here. But he wasn't like his stage act, from what I've read, was pretty, you know, it was his
yeah,
just stage act. He was just known for being off stage, just being kind of a horrible person.
Right. So example of that, Louis C.K. No, actually, Louis C.K.'s all the telltale clues of Louis C.K. were already in his stand up, where his offstage antics, in air quotes,
right,
were kind of already laid out. The map of that was already in his stand up. Yeah. You know, he was just he would do jokes like I think he would sing like, kind of like deconstruct songs. Like he would sing like a few bars of like Tea for Two, and he's like, Tea for Two, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, you know? that was a big closer, but it was apparently that was so big until the 1950s people knew about that, which is like, you know, people still kind of do that stuff today. I've heard comedians do that. Yeah.
So before we get into like how hated he was, here's just like a few praises of Frankie Faye. Jack Benny stated that he modeled his early stage character on Frankie Faye. James Cagney, what do you know of James Cagney? Isn't he like, you dirty rat, you killed my brother? Edgar G. Robinson, or is that James Cagney?
He was part of the they call him the Irish Mafia back in Hollywood.
Yeah, so he said, of all the great vaudevillians, I admired Frank the most. Bob Hope was impressed and patterned himself after Faye. He said, Frankie Faye was something else. I saw them all. Faye used to take the command of the stage. He was just a sensational man that could do more with nothing, with attitude, than any man I ever saw on stage. George Burns, what do you know of George Burns?
Gracie, George and Gracie. He always said goodnight, say goodnight, Gracie.
Yeah, so he's...
Oh, God.
Yep, and so what George Burns said of Frankie Faye, and this is more about his stage presence, that Frankie Faye had the best hands in show business, meaning when he was delivering stand-up comedy, he just kind of physically could maneuver his hands, where, say, Jack Benny would actually hold something in his hand because he didn't know.
I read that. I'd never like understood that before, but like, you know what Jack Benny was holding was a pool cue.
Like always?
Yeah, that's why he's, because he didn't know what to do with his hands. So he would hold that in his hands so he would appear to be not as nervous or have it look like his hands were doing something.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Oh, just a digression on the T for two bit. The punchline was T for two and two for T. Ain't that rich? Here's a guy that has enough T for two, so he's going to have T for two. I notice he doesn't say a word about sugar. bring him down the 1920s house with that closer.
1920s, dude, it was awesome.
So how would they laugh at that? I imagine men wearing straw hats in the audience slapping their knees.
And bow ties.
twirling their bow ties and slapping their knees at a joke that.
They might get so excited they take their straw hat off and they punch through the top of it. That happens a lot.
They would twirl their mustaches and go, oh, 23 Skidoos. That Frankie Faye is the cat's meow.
He's the cat's pajamas.
So like I said, he was paid, roughly around $18,000 a week in like around 1918, 1920. Money, and he was called the King of the Palace, which was the flagship theater it was the top, of the vaudevillian chain. So, essentially he was the star, the comedy star of vaudeville. And not only did he, kind of pioneer the style of stand-up comedy, he also pioneered being the MC of a show. He was the first one that did the modern MC come up between acts, and if they bomb, would kind of save the energy of the room, much like we see in modern day stand-up comedy. Because before then, in vaudeville, they would introduce acts with placards. So Frankie Faye was the first guy that would just come up in ordinary clothes and talk to the audience, and again, wildly influence the said comedians who I just mentioned.
Yeah, I think that was part of it, was the whole thing about him just being in normal clothes. That was kind of his big revolution, which seems kind of weird when you think about it. And the other thing that he did that was different was that he would kind of talk about when he wasn't quoting T for Two, he would kind of talk about his everyday life. Like he would mention his alimony, like he had to pay $25 in alimony, and he would talk about that and things.
In 1918 money.
So 1918 money.
Do you want to crunch them? Do you want to do a quick crunch of the numbers?
Let me crunch those numbers right now. You keep talking, but so he would just kind of talk about his real life experiences.
Yeah, so in a 1917 issue of Variety, going upon said alimony joke, it reported that Frankie Faye, he of pallid face and wavy hair, was next to closing, and there amused the house Foley with his oddly framed routine. He made mention of his alimony, $25 a week, that he still retained possession of the car, which the wise ones did not fail to get. Okay, first of all, that sounds hill-fucking-larious.
Well, but here's the thing. So here's the, to put this into context, Harmon, I've done crunching on the Comedy History 101.
$25 in 1917
$25 money? $25 in 1918 is $458 in 2019.
So, oh, okay. Right, yeah. Yeah. So another distinctive style that Frankie Faye had was he had a distinctive swishy style of walking, says an article, that was almost effeminate, and this in turn inspired both Bob Hope and Jack Benny.
Mm-hmm. Both guys.
So, okay. All right. So seems all fun and games, you know. So we have Frankie Faye doing his swishy walk, talking about alimony, doing deconstructing the song T for Two. All right. Great story if it ends there. Shall we take a dark turn on it?
Here we go. Here we go. Let's go. Let's take a right turn on, as I would say here in Germany, racism, Strasse.
Yeah, so it turns out he was a horrible human being and an alcoholic. So what we're talking about up front about he was the first husband of Barbara Stanwyck. So this was back when she was a chorus girl in vaudeville. So, you know, and he was, you know, the huge star of vaudeville. And the movie A Star Is Born is actually based on their marriage.
Okay, now I'll a little bone to pick. I read way too much about this.
Well, this is what we're here for.
Yeah,
because we are the ones that read too much on it. So yeah, let's set the record straight.
There's actually
and only if you're not going to defend racism.
No.
You're the least, like our president, the least racist person in the world.
I'm defending A Star Is Born.
Yes.
No, actually, because. Even like the 32 version of Star Is Born, they're pretty sure that was a kind of a direct ripoff of this other film that came out from the 20s. So they, you know, it's just kind of a ripoff of a ripoff. And while the Stanwyck and Faye story parallels A Star Is Born pretty closely, the stereotype, we'll go with meme. The meme existed before them. So,
right.
I mean, it's
well, you know, I think always in time there's been, you know, in show business, you know, showbiz couples where one excels more than the other. Mm-hmm. Like one was a star and then the other's career kind of launches.
Yeah. But, you know, being a bigot, a racist, and an alcoholic is just not a good, it's not a good combination. Like none of those, not one of those are good by themselves.
Yeah, and according to the American Vaudeville Museum, even when sober, he was dismissive and unpleasant. He was disliked by most of his contemporaries.
I think one of my favorite quotes here, I think that sums it all up, was from actor Robert Wagner of Austin Powers fame and also Heart to Heart back in the 80s. His quote was, he said that Faye was, quote, one of the most dreadful men in the history of show business. Faye was a drunk and anti-Semite and a wife beater. But the thing is, I couldn't figure out is how Robert Wagner was connected to, I don't know if they worked together.
Robert Wagner, he started as a stage actor.
Right.
I don't know how old he is now. He's still alive. Yeah. But again, when Faye transitioned out of being a vaudevillian comedian, he became a Broadway actor and was actually in the first stage version of Harvey. You know,
he was the
Jimmy
star.
Stewart movie? With the talking rabbit. But because he was so unpleasant and, you know, according to almost every article I read, burnt every bridge in Hollywood. He was turned down for the film version, which lost out to James Stewart, which went on to win the Academy Award.
Yeah, oh, poor old racist Faye.
Yeah, so, and again, let's just talk about just how horrible he was without being racist. He would make a stagehand. There would be a packed audience, and a stagehand would come and was like, "Come on, place this, Mr. Faye." He's like, he'd be like, takes several more minutes to tie his tie. And go, yeah, they can wait. They can wait. He went sort of mad with power.
Yeah.
So on one occasion, there was a fellow actor named Burt Wheeling. And in an attempt to humiliate him, he dragged him on stage unprepared and fired off a bunch of unrehearsed lines at him. And so, tired of the treatment, Wheeler, unnerved Faye by remaining silent the whole time until Faye finally cracked and said, "What's the matter? Why don't you have anything to say?" And Wheeler, in turn, said, "You call these laughs? I can top these titters without saying a word," and smacked Faye in the face to howls from the audience.
There you go.
So again, you mentioned what Robert Wagner said. Here's a few more quotes of contemporaries of Faye of the day. Comedian Jack Carter said he was a terrible man. Frankie Faye was vicious. The anti-Semite of the world, a real head of the Nazi group, a real hater, which not too good. And again, this is talking about a man who was, you know, the star of the vaudeville circuit, you know, at its height. Former vaudevillian and radio star Fred Allen remarked, "The last time I saw him, he is walking down Lover's Lane holding his own hand." Well, that's kind of cute.
What was the what's the Milton Berle joke? He could he had so few friends they could be counted on the hand of a one-armed man.
Yeah, insert Milton Berle biggest schlong in Hollywood joke here. And the reason why Milton Berle in particular had a disdain and hate for Frankie Faye was Milton Berle was Jewish, and one time he was standing in the wings watching his act, and Frankie Faye called out and he said, "Get that little Jew bastard out of the wings."
Yeah, that wasn't nice.
Which is a nice thing to say.
Yeah, but then Berle had his comeuppance, didn't he?
What happened?
You didn't hear about that. So that happened to Milton Berle a few times, and apparently Mr. Berle got a little sick of hearing that. So after one of the shows one day, Milton Berle grabbed a piece of stage scenery and waited until Faye came behind stage and smacked him in the face with it. And apparently gashed his nose.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Rightfully so. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And then so one comedy writer of the day, I think it's Milt Josephberg, said, "In a business known for its lack of bigotry, he was a bigot. This was no secret, but widely known and well substantiated." So Scott, what are we gathering from all this? Frankie Faye, the first comedian, a bigot and a racist, and not a nice man.
Not a nice man. Not a good combination.
And now then, but it, so after vaudeville and after his Broadway, he went off to do a few films. Did you check out any clips of his like film appearances? I heard not very good. He didn't really transfer that great into the, as they would say in the 1920s, the moving pictures.
No, I mean, I saw a couple. He was in one film with Barbara Stanwyck, did one scene together. Interesting enough about his film appearances is that he, nowadays, it would not be very woke, and he kind of had a, I'm trying to figure out the right term to use here. The way he would walk and act, he seemed a little, I guess the word they would use would be swishy.
Frank Faye?
Yes.
You know anything about those stolen jewels?
No.
Why? Oh, Barbara Stanwyck. May I present Mr. Faye?
We know each other. We're married.
Why, of course.
You know they would say it. So
that was his trademark. Again, back in the vaudeville days that, you know, yeah. So actually, you know, that's what actually Jack Benny said he took that sort of walk from Faye, but so he would just sort of just emulate it like a swishy walk.
Yeah, so there are a lot of homosexual based jokes at his expense, like in a couple of these shorts and things like that.
Yeah, so again, he burnt every bridge in Hollywood, but in 1943, he had a brief screen comeback in a low-budget monogram picture where he was teamed with comedian Billy Gerbert for a series of wartime comedies, but walked out after the opening film, Spotlight Scandals.
That's not a bad number, is it, Frank?
There isn't a bad number in the whole corps.
Leave it to Faye to pick him.
And lose him.
And Scott, do you know who he is replaced by? I can see you on the Google Doc. So
I can see it. I'm looking at it right now, dude.
Okay. He was.
Let me put it this way.
I'm setting you up to hit the home run, okay. Scott. He was replaced by everyone's least favorite stooge.
I was about to say my personal least favorite stooge, but yeah, replaced by Shemp Howard, or born name Shemp Horvitz.
Mm. So you would have to ask yourself, how shitty is your career going where you're replaced by Shemp Howard?
Shemp Howard, oh, dude. Poor old Shemp.
And again, I think there's a whole episode on Shemp Howard.
We'll definitely have to get into a whole Shemp episode.
I do think I would enjoy an afternoon going down a Shemp Howard rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'm ready, dude. I'm ready to go down that Shemp hole.
The other episode where that might tie into is the fifth banana of comedy groups. So we would have Shemp Howard. We would have Zeppo Marx.
Zeppo, yeah. There was like the Three Stooges. Like they started out, they had like a straight guy. What was his name?
It was somebody's Stooges.
Ted Healy. Ted Healy, yeah. Yeah, but that was a comp. But then they acted with a straight guy. Anyway, yeah, that's a whole other podcast. Yeah,
yeah, and just to go to complete this this holy trinity of Stooges. When the Stooges left Ted Healy just got a bunch of guys that sort of look like the Stooges, yeah, and put them in a bunch of movies. So that's a whole nother episode.
Well, what's the whole, while we to steer it back to the racism thing, weren't you watching were you watching that Bowery Boys movie?
Holy shit. Yeah. It was about, so there was a famous, like, sort of, daredevil in New York. His name is, let me just get who that was. It was called the Bowery, the movie. Let me just, so.
Yeah. But this is still this is on the subject of comedy and racism. So we're not going off the subject really.
Oh, okay. So back in, I think it was like the 20s or so, there was a real life daredevil. It might have been even earlier than the 20s, named Steve Brody in New York. And one of his claims to fame was he jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge. And it's kind of debated whether he actually did it or kind of faked it or not. Mm-hmm. So it was a movie version they put out called The Bowery. All I have to say about the movie version of The Bowery, which could be found on YouTube, not very woke in 2019.
No.
A little problematic.
The movie starts at a local tavern. Let's just say. Let's just say with the word, the name of the tavern is N-Word Joe's. Right?
Yeah. and that's not like once you've warmed up to the movie. That's fade in. Yeah. So again, I heard about like Steve Brody and I heard about this movie on the Bowery Boys podcast, and it's all, I kind of want to check out an old timey movie. You know, it featured old timey comedian Wallace Berry. Okay. In the script, imagine the script for the Bowery. The script would be fade in.
N-word Joe's.
Yeah, and again, in the movie, the lead character adopts a kind of a street kid known for throwing rocks at, as they say in the movie, I'm not going to say it because someone will record it and post it out of context. Throwing rocks at a not very nice term for Chinese people.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
So which they blatantly use in the movie. Okay. So, again, not very woke in that. But I think this this helps us on the home stretch of the history of Frankie Faye. And, again, what really kind of burnt all his bridges in Hollywood. Scott, what happened in 1946 at Madison Square Garden?
Well, well, well. You see, Harmon, Madison Square Garden couldn't just have one Nazi rally. No, no, no. They had to have one Nazi rally before the war, and then they had another one after the war. And the one after the war was held in support of our favorite racist comedian, Frankie Faye.
Yeah, so what was the backstory about that? So, again, what I've read was, it was something to do with, so he was Irish, so he was Catholic, so I think it was like, and again, it's like sort of how Trump does it, where it's like, no, no, it's not supporting Nazis, we're supporting Catholics. So do you know, it was something about the actor's equity or something like that? Do you know a little bit more? Can you just give us some backstory?
I mean, from what I've read, so Faye lodged a complaint with the actor's equity because there was some communist-sponsored rally where people were talking about the Pope and the Catholic Church. So Faye filed a complaint with the actor's equity, and they decided to censor Faye. Mm-hmm. And so then all of his friends got together at Madison Square Garden and held the so-called Friends of Frank Faye rally, which included people that praised Hitler, Mussolini, and Franco. And not just to remind people, this is basically about a year after the war. World War II was over. So you've got a bunch of people in New York City in Madison Square Garden praising the Nazi Party.
Yeah, so a reporter named Joseph Foster wrote, under the guise of being deeply pained over the Catholic comments about the Catholic Church, these organs of native fascism have been blowing the familiar tunes in all their repulsive cacophony. They said the issue is religion, but they are no more concerned with the religion than they were the political masters, the cutthroats of Berlin. Consider Frankie Faye himself the main attraction in the current whoop-de-doo. His anti-Semitism is well known, and his numerous brawls on that account are common gossip.
Well, here's the interesting thing about that, because I don't know, because when we were doing our research for this, I found an article about this, and I sent it to you. Just, I didn't really look at it, and then I started reading it, and
I read the same article, and the guy, it was kind of like, the guy writing was kind of anti-Semitic himself.
Well, it's kind of a white nationalism website, is what I found out.
That's what I found out reading, like, two sentences into it.
Yeah, into it, and there's, because they mentioned a part where he's just like, somebody, Frankie Faye, was like, yeah, he couldn't get work anymore because the Jews run Hollywood, and the guy writing the article is like, of course, what else is new? He said something like that. But the interesting part about the article is that it was really well researched, and the guy delved into different aspects of this rally, and he kind of traced it back to this writer, to some other guy, speaking of the history of comedy, some other guy who is seen as the kind of the pop culture historian who consulted on that CNN history of comedy stories. And so this guy, racist white guy, was saying all the super racism about this rally is kind of traced to this guy, because the racist white guy who wrote the article was saying it wasn't as racist as you think it is.
And he according to him,
but he pulled up.
Just vanilla. Racism.
He'd done his research. He'd pulled up a lot of articles, and he said this person didn't talk and this person didn't talk. So interesting just to see, even though I do not stand for white nationalism or racism, it was interesting to see, you know.
Because you're the least racist person in the world.
Exactly. I'm the least racist president in the world. But it was interesting to see somebody doing research. And the guy actually wrote that article. I actually had a quote where he said, I hate doing investigative reporting, but, you know, you made me do it. Because, yeah, he'd gone back and, like, dug up all that stuff. So that was really – there's a lot more to go into there about that whole rally thing. Because we both thought – when you mentioned it, when I saw it, I got confused it with
I thought it was the original, like, the Madison Square Garden thing that won the documentary short.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was as well too. But it wasn't. That's what I was saying. There were multiple Nazi rallies in Madison Square Garden.
Well, I kind of hate to say this about our country. We're not the least racist country in the world.
No.
We kind of have a long history of that.
Got some things to work out.
Yeah. So again, this is 1946, and there were speeches delivered in support of Franco, Mussolini, and their fallen hero Adolf Hitler. And they promised that the defeat of Germany would not go unpunished. And beneath the podium was a banner that saluted the guest of honor. And the banner said, the friends of Frankie Faye. So anyways, this rally backfired on Faye in every possible way. He never worked again. And he was blacklisted from Hollywood in 1961. Frankie Faye died in Santa Monica at the age of 69, and he moved into the as far as comedy history goes, complete obscurity.
Yeah,
George Burns. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Before the end, apparently it wasn't very like he got declared like unfit, you know, mentally. So the end wasn't very pleasant ending for him.
Yeah, and again, like you were talking about Andrew Dice Clay, who sort of had a renaissance in his career. Frankie Faye had zero renaissance. And if you look back, 2000 or in 1919, he was the biggest star in vaudeville, the biggest star in vaudeville.
Yeah, which would put him, you know, one of the top stars in the world.
And he is not talked about just because he was just an awful, awful human being. George Burns, upon his death, said Faye hated Jews, but he was very religious. And then he went on to say some long, meandering story about Derby with him.
I didn't get this story the first time I read it, but now I get it, and it kind of makes sense to me.
Maybe just paraphrase the story.
Basically, he was just saying, yeah, he hated... So this is George Burns talking about Frankie Faye, and he was saying, yeah, Faye hated Jews, but he was very religious. So what to pull kind of a prank on him, George Burns would go have lunch with Frankie Faye, and then every time Frankie Faye would start to eat, George Burns would say, oh, somebody died, you know, Tom Fitzpatrick died, and so Frankie Faye would start to say a prayer, and so George Burns would keep doing that. He would do that like four or five times and mention somebody who died so that Frankie Faye would say a prayer and his food would get cold, and then George Burns would leave.
Yeah, and he was a horrible man.
Yeah.
I guess. Any other takeaways about Frankie Faye? I mean, it's kind of an interesting rabbit hole to go down the Frankie Faye.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Sort of an innovator in comedy, lost to history, and held a Nazi rally.
that was it. It's always interesting to hear about these guys who were like super big at the top of the world and just not there anymore. And then not nice to know, but it's... A little bit of karma at the end to know if you're not a good person, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah, or if you hold a Nazi rally at Madison Square Garden, that's going to be a death wish to your career.
But I fit that into not a good person. I would say Nazi rallies.
That'd be the umbrella. Not a good person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of not being a good person holding a Nazi rally. And yeah.
Exactly.
So just be a Frankie good Faye, be nice. Lost to history, pioneer of stand-up comedy, but let's just keep him lost to history. Despite the fact that we're
lost to history,
bringing him up for like a half hour.
Except for
bringing
historians.
Him back to history.
Yeah. Comedy historians like us.
Yeah, so I guess that does it for our episode on Frankie Faye, the first comedian in history, pioneer of stand-up comedy, who was a horrible racist bigot. And with that, it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Oh, Harmon. Well, as always, speaking of racism, we have our other sister podcast, This is the President, in which Harmon and I just did an episode on the newest Reagan and Nixon tape. Racist tape that just got released. So come tune into us. Hear us talk about racism and presidents. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, Last.fm, everywhere you find all your favorite podcasts. And as well, Harmon, I directed a short documentary film called Everything You Want to Know About Sudden Birth, But We're Afraid to Ask, that Harmon produced, which is on the festival circuit in the States. I'm not allowed to say where it's going to be playing yet, but it will be playing.
You can say where soon. It has played, which I saw in New York.
You saw it in New York at the Rooftop Films Festival just last weekend. And it went pretty well. Got a very nice note from those people. So
I don't know how. Plug your ears if you're listening, other people that had films in that festival or in that screening. Kind of the only one that got laughs.
All right, good. Well, it's always nice to get some laughs. But yeah, so we'll be touring around. You can find more details over at my website, scottcolonico.com, for where we'll be playing next. And that's it for me and Harmon.
All right, so I have a new book out called Tribe Spotting: Undercover Culture Stories. You can check it out on Amazon. It's about my true life exploits going undercover and exploring the concept of tribalism in America. Also, August 17th through the 25th, I will be at the Edinburgh Festival doing my new solo show, Harmon Leon's American Horror Story, at the Banshee Labyrinth, roughly around 8:30. So come and say hi.
8:35. And then before that, you'll be in Berlin.
I'll be yes, Scott and I will maybe we'll be doing an episode where we record it actually in the same room.
I know. The first time ever.
That'd be freaky. Yeah. Yeah, so thanks a lot for tuning in to another episode of Comedy History 101. Where we school you in comedy. Until next time, bye bye.
Bye bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.